The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower & Company, which is entirely responsible for its content.
This is Amtower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center, with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark Amtower. My guests today are Rob Cohn, the program director at NITAC, running three GWACs and the Assisted Acquisition Center, and return guest Michael Fischetti, the president of the National Contract Management Association. Gentlemen, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks for coming. And Rob's a return guest as well. So I want to start off with a little bit of background and a little bit of updating. So, Michael, you guys just wrapped up an event. So what's going on with NCMA?
NCMA's on a roll. It was really great. And I think it's indicative of the climate maybe a little bit. We had almost 1,000 folks at the Washington Marriott Wardman Park this week. Had some really high-level speakers, meetings, governance, leadership conference. We tried some new stuff with interactive breakout sessions where we get our contract managers in a room and they're, you know, quizzing each other on their knowledge of the FAR or rules and regulations regarding contracting in a collaborative
way. Jeopardy for the FAR.
It was kind of board games. You know, I walked through the rooms and there were people yelling and laughing, and it was really good to see. So not only just learning stuff, but, you know, kind of getting to know each other and meet up with stuff. And we had some really good high-level speakers. General Ellen Polakowski, a 4-star from the Air Force Materiel Command. Claire Grady, that was her first address, I think, to the wider contract management community. She was a keynote talking about all her initiatives and policy areas. We had Phaedra Kadros, the Office of Customer Service from the General Services Administration. Just a really good event and some great panels, all new folks, new panels. We have our senior executive panel each year with different folks. This time we had Daryl Scott from Boeing, Diane Balderson from Northrop, from Mitch Ross from the NOAA, as was our panel moderator, Dan Kane, who runs the Center for Medicare Services, and Steve.
You're
Saris.
Doing all this without a list. That's pretty damn impressive.
Yeah, that's pretty. It's pretty. Well, I invite them all. So it was a great event. Lots of things going. Even I decided to go up on top, and we did a panel of association executives with the CEOs from NDIA and executives representing ACT-IAC, American Proposal Management Association, and others, you know, just talking about the association world and talking about all the things we talk about, you maybe have heard in the past with regards to how education is transmitted, the role of associations, networking, you know, people getting involved in their professional associations, things like that. It's kind of a different twist on that. And a point that people don't understand is that you can be involved in a professional association that's related to acquisition, and the acquisition workforce rules permit that involvement for continuous learning, not just education. So, you know, OMB has been trying to, you know, professionalize the workforce, as is DOD with the better buying power. So a lot of good things going on. It was a really positive, great week. We all come home feeling, you know, you work hard and it's nice to kind of feel like a back, light up a camel and, you know, relax and, you know, have done a good job.
There you go. Pop the beverage of choice.
That's right.
And I'm assuming that there were CEUs aplenty available for attenders.
Yes, sir. All of them are aligned to our body of knowledge. We have a contract management body of knowledge, which cross-references DAU and FACC competencies in the government. Mm-hmm. So everything is education. From A to Z, we assign competencies. The breakout presenters do the same. We validate that through our education committee. And so it's all credible information. You know.
Okay. Anything else new with NCMA you want to mention?
Just that
membership is open.
Yes, sir. Membership is always open, of course. Just a lot moving. We're kind of widening our aperture a little bit as a contract management association. We're interspersing a little bit more from state and local content or commercial, you know, supply chain, things like that, just here and there. Bringing back, trying to maybe better coordinate and align all the communities in contracting, which can tend to be a little bit siloed. So I think that's
just
something.
Just a bit, yeah.
Yeah, there's just some things we're trying to do there. We can develop a good rapport with our senior executives and leaders in government industry. We had a board of advisors meeting, which is like 80-some senior executive SPEs from all the various agencies in town and VPs of contracting and that. We introduced them to our contract management leadership development program. These are young folks, 3 to 6 years in the workforce, and they're they go through a leadership program with NCMA, and we have like a 75% give back rate where they become later on chapter leaders and that sort of thing. So they've met with folks this week from in courses with folks like Elliot Branch and various leaders on mentor, you know, and they have mentoring opportunities and they have to write papers and things like that. So we're always putting that call. We'll be putting that call out this winter again for folks for the next class. And here's the best part. The tuition is free. It's all about we ask you to fund your own travel and that, but through their employers, but, you know, can't beat the cost. So it's a good way to get involved and get to know people in NCMA. You know, you could end up being sitting next to, you know, Claire Grady at a meeting or something like that, be introduced.
Well, I encourage people when I'm training on LinkedIn to look at groups like NCMA. Not going to encourage them to go to join the NITAC group unless they own one of the contracts. I encourage government people to go. But on your LinkedIn group, do you have to be an NCMA member to join and monitor the conversations?
Not on the LinkedIn, not at all. Okay. No, we encourage the professional community to engage. I mean, all thoughts. I always tell people when I go to chapter meetings and that, hey, you know, if you're in you're in your office and you're asked to perform some task and you're not really sure how to do it, throw a question out on the LinkedIn group and you'll get all kinds of great answers and you can end up looking pretty smart with not necessarily all that much effort. It used to be, well, you know, do you know the answer? Did you look in the FAR? What does it say? You know,
what does it say? and can you decipher? Rob, what's going on at NITAC?
Well, so Mark, NITAC is poised to have its best year ever this coming fiscal year. We finished last fiscal year with just under $5 billion in awards for our customers on our three GWACs. This year, you know, as you know, we have awarded all of our master GWAC contracts. They're 10-year vehicles, and they're available for use throughout the federal government. So this year, we have seen a significant growth just in the first quarter over last year's first quarter. I think that the word
is getting out there. And the quarter's not even done. You've got growth. There you go.
That's right.
Cool.
So, you know, we continue to focus on, you know, what I like to call a friction-free IT acquisition. We're trying to work with our customers, build relationships with the government customer community to help them reduce the friction in IT acquisition by providing them a more streamlined, easy way to get awards and meet the agency challenges within any type of acquisition for IT. Anything from simple procurement of products right through to managed services and the complex and customized IT solutions that many agencies need. We have a high focus on cloud and building our infrastructure of contract holders that are able to meet those needs of the federal agencies. And really just, you know, as I said, and I say over and over again, our organization is about building relationships. We are not a transaction-based organization. We spend an enormous amount of time out there meeting with the contracting and acquisition folks throughout the government, building relationships, helping them understand how they can reduce the friction in the IT acquisition process by leveraging existing IT GWAC contracts that are out there. And also a big part of our program in a growth area within our program is our partnership with the contracting community. Spending a lot of time trying to build partnerships between contractors, between OEMs and those contractors that have an award on our vehicles, because there are many different ways that you know, companies that don't or OEMs that don't have an award on a GWAC like this can participate.
Yeah, you had an article in Wash Tech about this.
I did. Just recently wrote an article on this because I think it's important. I think it's important for the IT manufacturing community to know and for the value-added reseller community to know that just getting an award on these contracts is just the first step. You can add new partners in the OEM community throughout the 10-year of this contract. We meet regularly. We recently were meeting with Oracle and some of the larger manufacturers, EMC and Brocade, and they're trying to figure out a way how they can leverage our contract holders to push their solutions through our vehicle, and we're helping them do that. So we feel that we play a key role in developing those relationships and building that community of practice that will really help the government customer get what they need. Because what we have is contract holders on these vehicles, that integrators and value-added resellers that can help our customers build the stack that they need in order to meet their total IT challenges, not just buying you know, several different pieces of an IT solution. Our contract holders are encouraged to work with the OEM community to build the total solution so that it's much easier and removes a lot of the friction for our IT acquisition customers to be able to get their needs met.
Cool. We're going to take a break after that brief introduction to get a few messages in here. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. We will be back after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. I'm here with Rob Cohn, program director at NITAC. If you're not familiar with NITAC, number one, shame on you. CIOSP 3, CIOSP 3 Small Biz, CIOCS, the newly awarded GWAC, the follower to ECS 3, I guess. And I'm also here with Michael Fischetti, the president of the National Contract Management Association. So I want to talk about one of the issues, many of the issues facing the 1102 community. The reason I asked if your conference, I knew the answer to the question, whether or not you were offering CEUs. You know, if you're going to get feds out of the office, if you're a vendor out there and you want feds out of the office, offering CEUs, offering sessions that educate people legitimately is an important factor. What are the training issues with the 1102 community at present?
Yes, sir. And first of all, I know you're also doing it in a neutral form with your colleagues from other sectors. You know, your government and industry learning together. I think that's really important. So you're kind of hitting two birds with one stone, you know, that networking and all that and understanding where each side comes from. Everything all our programs are aligned to the contract management body of knowledge, which is greatly well received by the community and the people that attend those things. So they're all assigned various, you know, and our body of knowledge is sort of designed in the acquisition phases, as you might have, you know, imagined, pre-award, award, post-award, and specialized topics like IT or construction and things like that. So everything is aligned to that way, and it really, really resonates well. And it's been that way since for about 2 years now. So we're all very proud of that and continue to work that. It's really important for these contract managers to come together and to do that. And we really have a great diversity of content because it comes from our members, from our senior members, and they all have huge depth of experience that they love to share with their colleagues. So we're really, really proud of that as well as all our other programs.
Now, Rob, I know that number one, when a federal 1102 calls your office, they should get CEUs for the call because they're being educated along the way as well. It doesn't quite work that way, but what are your thoughts? I mean, you have the Assisted Acquisition Center, number one. How are you helping these guys do their jobs? Because it's not easy.
So we do many different things. One of the things I just want to touch a little bit on what Mike said. I attend a lot of the NCMA conferences, and it's a wealth of information. And I actually gain a lot of my CEUs by going to those conferences and participating. But we also offer CEUs through our training program. As I said, our goal is to build strong relationships with our customers. And one of the ways we do that is by offering a two-hour training session on what is a government-wide acquisition contract, how do you utilize a government acquisition contract, and what are the benefits of doing that. We come out to federal installations, federal offices, and we try to bring all of the acquisition folks into a room, both the program side and the contracting side, to walk through what does it mean to use a government-wide acquisition contract? Why should you consider that when you have IT requirements coming down the, in your portfolio? So each person that attends that training gets CEUs, but also, as you mentioned, the assisted acquisition program, we have stood up a full service assisted acquisition department within our program now, to help support those agencies who have needs that can't be met by their existing contracting staff. There are many different DOD and other agency installations that just don't have the resources to be able to do or to have the expertise specifically in the IT acquisitions. Program offices throughout the government working through their acquisition office can come directly to us to manage their entire acquisition lifecycle. right through from acquisition planning through solicitation, through award and administration and closeout of these IT task orders. We tend to see that most of the customers that we have that are working with us on the assisted acquisition portfolio have very large, highly complex IT requirements in which they want that added support, that 25 years of historical infrastructure that's been built behind the NITAC program, in that knowledge to be able to make sure that they get the best acquisition in place for those types of requirements. And we have fully vetted group of 1102 contracting officers, many of them who attended the recent NCMA show. And they're there to support our customers to make sure that they get that need met. But as you know, we do, customers can use our contracts in two different ways. They can issue awards and administer contracts on their own through their own contracting officers within those agencies. But now they can also come to us if they need that extra resource to be able to provide that support to help augment those contracting actions that need to be done, and they can be done through our office.
Okay. Are any of the issues that your community face, which vehicles to use or access current vehicles or to roll out their own? If so, they're going to roll out their own. What kind?
There's always this historical issue, and I, even when I was in the profession practicing myself, with regards to the acquisition choice vehicle, you develop your plan the way it's supposed to work. You develop an acquisition plan, you balance the requirements against your needs and your deliverables, et cetera, in the environment. And then you go and look at, the choice of vehicles. And sometimes agencies have a preference for their own internal contracts for or there's almost that policy says you have to go to this contract, because this is the one we awarded or whatever. So I think the answer is like exactly what Rob is talking about. And that's what shared services and category management, strategic sourcing is all supposed to lead you to. There's no reason for many, many agencies to be reduplicating a vehicle that can provide a choice support. And in fact, the fewer there are in that case, the more leverage the buying can become against the vendors that are on those vehicles. So, Rob's, those choices at NITAC are the way to go if you're going to have depending on the circumstances and the requirement. But there shouldn't be a need for multiple duplicative agency vehicles that offer the same services.
Right.
So I will say that the biggest challenge that an organization like NITAC has is the awareness, right? Mm-hmm. There are an enormous number of acquisition folks throughout the federal government, as we all know, fully capable. But many of them, learn acquisition in phases, and many of them learn that how they buy IT or how they bought IT 20 years ago is how they're going to continue to buy it today. So we spend an enormous amount of time working with the acquisition community to educate them on what are some of the new ways or some of the other ways that may help make the acquisition process more friction-free, streamlined process, dealing with a group of contract holders that have gone through an extraordinary amount of vetting and source selection to be able to be put on a contract like this, really shortened the time frame in order to get an award done on highly complex IT acquisitions. So we take it very seriously, our role in helping to educate and inform the IT acquisition community about what our contracts can help them do and how they can meet their needs and to have total control over the acquisition process. They're just leveraging a vehicle that's out there and been built through an OMB initiative to be able to help streamline the process, help them manage the process a little bit easier, and to have that added support from my office. 60 people who have been doing this for 20 years, who have the knowledge in the IT acquisition community, who can really help guide these contracting officers throughout the government in meeting and getting the best results from every IT acquisition they put together.
Okay. And OMB's been more assertive too, Rob, right, in terms of any potential proliferation of these kinds of vehicles. They're taking a little more centralized view on it.
Yeah. Quick question. I've spoken at a number of events recently, and there seems to be a misconception on the part of some about the scope of NITAC. I mentioned CIOCS to one company that I'm dealing with, and they go, "Oh, we don't do health IT." And I'm going, time out. There's more to it than that. Is this an issue you've run across before because NIH is your parent?
It certainly is. The NIH program, I mean, our program sits within the National Institutes of Health. And, of course, as a result of that, we have an emphasis on health IT. All of our contract holders had to prove that they had a domain capability in that area to help meet the needs within our own family of NIH and the Department of Health and Human Services. But the contracts are built through the OMB initiative as a government-wide contract. So yes, we can meet all of the health IT needs that the government has, but we can also meet every other need throughout the gamut of all the IT challenges throughout the government. Our contractors had to not only prove the capability in the health IT arena, they had to prove the capability throughout all of the IT different areas. And one of the things that we did when we built our contracts is we built them in such a way and evaluated the contractors on their ability to meet the changing needs in IT, evaluating how they would adapt to the new and upcoming challenges over the next 10 years. So if you look across our contracts, you will see that we don't have hundreds and hundreds of contract holders on our vehicles. We have a short list of contract holders on our vehicles, companies that were able to prove that they were agile and able to change as the government's needs change to be able to meet those sophisticated needs that the government has. For example, managed services on CIOCS, a lot of the cloud services, a lot of the cloud solutions that need to be done, they can be done through any of our contracts, but we wanted to make sure that we had the best of the best when it came to the IT contractors, and we spent years vetting these contractors through source selection to make sure that over the next 10 years that the government customer would never question value or the capability and quality of those contract holders.
Cool. We're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. We shall return. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. I have been misspeaking. Michael Fischetti is the executive director of NCMA. There is another president of NCMA. It's one of the members. So you want to mention him?
Yeah, our president this year is Ms. Penny White from the Boeing Corporation. She works in commercial contracting in Seattle.
I've heard of Boeing.
Yeah, so they've been around a while, you know.
And Rob Cohen, I have not been. You are the program director of NITAC.
I am as of today, yes.
There you go. Okay, that would be good.
I do know.
In the next segment, I'll give you a job title increase. How's that?
There you go.
There we go. So Jason Miller had this piece out recently on the inability of the 1102s to communicate with industry. Is that still really a big issue? Is it something that a GWAC program can facilitate? Mike, start off.
Yeah, but this actually came up in a panel that I hosted at our GCMS the other day, where it was referenced by Jim Williams from GSA, former
IAC
and FSS commissioner, and so forth. But regarding one particular agency that the thought was that they're prohibited from meeting with industry or going to events like at NCMA. So it is still an issue from our perspective. It seems to be getting better. However, many government agencies, all government agencies, have instituted these somewhat written draconian policies and approval levels with regards to their folks attending training or meeting with industry or meeting with the press, etc. And I think it's going to take a while to thaw that out. However, we're seeing approvals, we're seeing our attendance increase and that sort of thing. However, it's still that myth out there, I think, by many, I think, understand, but I think many still don't understand the importance of industry and government talking, that there's nothing wrong with talking with government industry, and you can't talk about an ongoing source selections on the street, of course, but you can certainly talk about most other things other than that in terms of your motivations and what the government, what the customer is planning to acquire next year and those sorts of things. I absolutely nothing wrong with it. The bottom line is you just have to use common sense and be fair, right? You can't, if you're going to have lunch with one company day after day, well, then you better have lunch with the other companies that might be in the offering as well. So all of that sort of thing. So I think it's lifting, our attendance and our figures are getting better and better. So I think it is improving. However, you know, there were those transgressions by a couple of government agencies a few years ago that seemed to certainly got the ire of the Hill up. And so there's been a lot of attention
that doesn't take much sometimes.
But, you know, FPP, you know, you've probably talked about myth busting and all that's all out there, and that's mm-hmm. still in effect. And Anne Rung and everyone on down continues to promote that. You know, our leaders that come to our and speak at our events talk about that. The fact that they're standing on our stage talking to 1,000 people about various issues within their scope of authority is proof enough that that's permitted. So I think there's sometimes restrictive training dollars, but the and you know, we've had to get an Office of Government Ethics opinion that we post on our website prominently that totally shows the legal implications that it's absolutely fine to go out there and meet. Not only that, but to actually get involved and be on a volunteer with an association like NCMA. Nothing wrong with it at all. Yet, quite frankly, many local general counsels out there have different interpretations, all of whom, by the way, are active members of the ABA. But when it comes to the people that they're advising, somehow, you know, you're breaking the law if you go to an NCMA chapter dinner. Kind of frustrating,
right.
Sorry.
So, you know, Dan Gordon tried to address this issue many years ago through his myth-buster policy, right? So we at the NITAC program have a very different philosophy with consideration to relationship with industry. Our program is basically founded on relationship with industry. If we don't have a good relationship with industry, we don't have a program, because we feel that we are a facilitator between industry and the government acquisition community. So one of the recent initiatives that we have just recently put into place is creating procurement previews, facilitating the conversations between our customers and our contract holders, pre-solicitation, to be able to have those open communications. We're trying to educate the contracting community to make sure that they understand that free-flowing communication with industry is a key to a successful acquisition. And so we spend a lot of time trying to, encourage our customers, encourage the, as part of our training, encourage the contracting officers to feel free to bring industry in to help form acquisition in through the market research phase. And I think that it's effective. I think that we're starting to see some movement there. We're leading our own initiative, as I said, to help promote that, to be able to facilitate that for our customers. And I think that, as Mike said, we're seeing some movement towards it. But again, it all comes down to education. It all comes down to raising awareness of what it is that contracting officers can do and can't do. And as I said, I spend a lot of time going out and meeting with our customers and sitting in a room and having a free discussion with contracting officers. And it's amazing to me that the fear of trying to do something or to convince them to look at other options besides what they've been doing for 20 and 30 years, it's a huge challenge. You have to be very convincing. You have to show them the rules, regs, and you have to be able to, you know, make that convincing argument so that they walk out of the room and go, I get it now. I understand the rules around this. And by us helping to facilitate those conversations, I think that's helping as well.
Well, you bring to the table a credibility on the issue that contractors really don't have. When a contractor tries to educate an 1102 on that particular issue, it looks self-serving.
Absolutely.
You're not. You're another 1102, in effect.
Our office is made up mostly of 1102s who understand the rules, and those are the same people who are going out and talking with the contracting officers in the field who have the requirements. So I think that by having that credibility, by having that, showing that there is an integrity built into this process, and that showing them what types of discussions and encourage them to have these discussions, because as we talked a little bit about in our assisted acquisition program, we have free-flowing discussions with industry before an acquisition hits the street, because we want to make sure that we put together the best acquisition, the best solicitation that's going to meet the needs of those customers. And we bring the customers into those discussions to make sure that they understand and have that open communication with industry.
Can't say enough. I guess so then when I, so you're telling me that those years of pulling out my RFP after every 5 years and just kind of whiting out the, you know, the dates and then re-soliciting. So that was a bad practice? Is that what you're saying? Anyway, yeah, no, I totally agree.
Hey, which agency were you at?
I think that Rob is right on. And this is, it's all about communication. OMB, all the formal guidance, when you talk to the top leaders, that's the case. I do believe, though, there is that myth out there. Myth has not been busted. And through several local agents. Many agencies are right on top of it. They've created industry liaison groups. But it was an interesting perspective. One thing I heard, though, you don't want to send the signal by creating a focal point for that industry government contact, that because, in effect, it's everybody's job. It's the contracting officer's role to be meeting with industry. That's not something you necessarily kick upstairs to the small business office, to the competition advocate, to the industry liaison, or the SPE. Themselves, each contracting officer has that responsibility. And I think the other part of all of this is, though, is giving them the tools and education and resources to allow them to do that, to get out of their office and their cubicle and meet with the program managers, to meet with industry, and not be stuck with a pile of paper. I go back to something that we made a mistake on, in my opinion, years ago, is when they used to be called, I don't know, you all remember the GS 1106 procurement clerks, mm-hmm. and they used to be clerical support. So, computers came along, the information age came on, and somehow it was felt, well, by having this technology on your desk, you could get rid of everything else. And so now they have, they're answering their phones, they're sending, they're responding to tons of email, and they have real work that they have to be doing. They're overloaded with PRONs or PRs or whatever the requirement document is called in a particular agency.
That was one of the fallouts from reinventing government, as I recall.
I believe so. Yes, sir. And I think that's we haven't recovered from that. And I think that we need to look at the full complement of support around the contractor. So not just the legal and the technical and financial, but the actual resource behind that person. Because that contracting officer has that authority. And that authority, they should be making decisions and have the time to write DNFs and not just provide reporting mechanisms or, doing all the other administrivia that's involved with being a good contract manager.
Yeah, on the contracting side, we call it ROI, and the ROI on 1102s is potentially huge if you don't give them enough support.
Right. Yeah. So when I learned how to be a contracting officer through the training that was provided, it was we were taught to be business advisors. And I believe that the workload and that contracting officers have, it doesn't allow them a lot of wiggle room to be an advisor, right. A business advisor. They are judged on the churn of actions that they can make.
Maybe that's why they don't take those conversations with industry.
Right. And I think it's an education that needs to be both bottom up and top down through the leadership of the agencies, because you're not going to, if you're not rated on your interaction with industry to build the best acquisition, you're going to focus on getting the pile of files completed on your desk, and that's what they're inundated with. It's the resource issue that they're not able to be the full business advisor that I believe that it's designed that they... That's what a contracting officer be.
Yeah, and I think that we look a lot at the acquisition process, but maybe we also need to be looking at the internal business process that supports the acquisition process, because the other misnomer of all of this is that it takes so long from the time the RFP comes out. Well, as we all know, how much time do we take before we got the RFP out?
Absolutely.
How long has those requirements people been waiting because they couldn't? They had to come together to figure out what they were doing and get their funding and just get internal agency approval, all those approvals that are not listed in the FAR.
Right. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. We shall return for our final segment after this, and I believe we're going to be discussing Vitara back after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. We're wrapping up a pretty interesting discussion here on a variety of issues around contracting procurement. So with Michael Fischetti of NCMA and Rob Cohn of NITAC, we're going to discuss Vitara. So it's all the buzz in the trade press. And, FASA, FARA, ITM, RA, FISMA, now Vitara. What's the impact of this thing, and what's the intent of this thing? Rob, kick us off.
So I can touch on a little bit of the intent that has as it relates to the program that I run, the GRAC program. So I understand that FITARA is designed to build an infrastructure on how to better manage the IT process throughout the agencies, better build a reporting and a mechanism to be able to track what is going on within every department within the government, including DOD. So some of the things that we do as a GRAC program that help in that effort is, you know, every order that is processed through our contracts, we maintain an extensive amount of information on those orders. So what we're starting to do is we're being able to provide back to CIOs of agencies that use our contracts what they're buying, who they're buying it from, how much they're paying for it, and when they're purchasing it. So that really helps them with being able to put together their FITARA reporting. It also helps them be able to, I believe, be more strategic in how they align their IT purchasing, to be able to leverage some of these ideas around building catalogs of services that agencies buy on a repetitive basis. We're able to help agencies put together catalogs to make it very simple and easy for agencies to be able to purchase repetitive items over and over. You mentioned earlier recently the OMB came out with a memo on how best to purchase desktops and laptops. Mm-hmm. That was just a start. We've been working with the other GRAC agencies to be able to do this. It's been a two-year effort to get to where we are today. And what it does is it provides a mechanism where agencies can come directly to our vehicles, select what laptops they want to purchase, already at a competitive price that's been driven down by the anticipated bulk purchasing that will be done through these vehicles, and be able to just click and buy and receive delivery. And that's just an example of how it's done on a simple commodity like a desktop and laptop. But I believe there's future growth in that area, and we're looking at how we can do that for sort of cloud storage and some of the more complex IT challenges out there. But I think that really can help with the FITARA efforts. You mentioned EGOS. And EGOS is a database of record that is used by our customers and by us and tracks every single order that is procured through our vehicles. And that EGOS system was built with FITARA before FITARA was FITARA. So we've been tracking this type of data for years. And now we're being able to put it in the format that each agency is requiring it, being able to provide them that reporting to help them make into better shape how they're going to buy IT in the future.
Thanks, Rob. And my point would be that everything Rob described is great initiatives that he's had the vision and his staff and the planning to go ahead and execute. Irregardless of FITARA in most cases. And quite frankly, there are leaders like Rob, many others around our community that are doing similar things. So I guess I would be cautious about overemphasizing how FITARA may ultimately change all that. It may facilitate, but I mean, it's the goal, of course, is to enhance the role of CIO, and that's all, of course, well and good, but we don't want to lose sight of all the other communities that are involved with ensuring the progressivity of our acquisition system, such as the project manager and the contract manager and that sort of thing. So I think we need to really keep this all in mind, and so I'm a little bit leery of a legislative solution that we'll all be back here in a year high-fiving each other and how things are great, all better and good. Because I think there's just fundamental management processes and leadership and execution that still must be addressed regardless of who ultimately has authority. And so, obviously there needs to be an architectural design, and then there needs to be a determination of how you're going to get there, given the short-natured funding that the government agencies must live with, the decentralized structure of most government agencies, regional and local offices and all of that. And I think, and then the project management discipline that is required to get from A to Z, coming together with your requirements, co-locating all your funding together, and executing a true IT architecture that will cover all the various system, localized disparate offices and business processes that are ultimately going to get us where we need to go. So I think it's going to take a village of people and community with strong centralized leadership at the very top of the organization or the agency to execute the way forward.
See, I look at this as going back to our whole philosophy of friction-free acquisition, mm-hmm. right? So what I fear is that if it's not managed correctly, you're going to create more friction in the acquisition, of IT. So I think that many agencies are struggling through this challenge to make sure that how it's implemented at the agency and department level doesn't cause too much added friction to the acquisition process. We have very qualified, very capable acquisition folks throughout there who know how to buy IT and have been buying it strategically for years. So I think that we just need to, help, and we're trying to help internally within NIH and HHS be able to be wary of the fact that we don't want this to cause more friction in acquisition. We want to be able to make sure that it's implemented in a way that aligns with removing the friction in IT acquisition.
Okay, makes sense.
Yeah, there's generalized contracting strategies that can certainly support the need for the iterative method by which IT is rolled out in government agencies in the future, and all of that can occur. And so all that expertise must be brought to bear in order to have to come that. It's not fair to put all this authority or responsibility on one person's shoulders if they don't have the necessary wherewithal to be able to carry that out. So I think it's going to be important.
I have a final change of gears here before we wrap the show, and that is oftentimes when a contract goes out, there's some sort of metric that's put on it. You have to be ISO certified, et cetera. I've heard rumors lately that NITAC has been visiting Carnegie Mellon. Is this accurate? What's going on here?
So recently, Carnegie Mellon actually visited us. So
there
we've been preparing for 2 years to go through the audit to become CMMI certified for services. And the reason we did that is because we dedicate ourselves to be a quality-driven organization, dedicated to customer excellence, and that's what we're all about. So I wanted to, use an organization like CMMI to come in and audit all of our practices around our services and the acquisition that we do. Auditing every single thing that we do from customer service right through to acquisition and awarding of contracts. I wanted to be able to show the community that we have built an infrastructure in our program, process improvement procedures within our program, analysis of repetitive processes to be able to show the community that we have built a program and have a program that is certified at a level of excellence. CMMI for services is not something that a typical government program would go after. It took an enormous amount of work on the staff of the program, enormous amount of preparation, but very proud to announce that we have passed the audit and are now CMMI level 2 certified in service. This is a huge accomplishment for our program. We believe that over the next coming years, we will continue to use the CMMI model to improve and to move to the next level of CMMI certification. But I can't say enough about how proud I am of our program and the staff of our program and all the work that they put into to be able to attain a certification that is not something that a typical government program would go after because of the resources and the time and effort it takes to be able to make sure that you have these repeatable process improvement models in place on a day-to-day basis.
Congratulations, Rob, on that. And that's something all government companies supporting the government and government even agencies should aspire to. We have a similar endeavor going on with our contract management body of knowledge where we are intending to become ANSI certified through the standards industry. We have a steering group leading that effort, Al Berman, former OFPP administrator, Len Vincent, key leaders from actually every sector, DOD, civilian, commercial, government contractor, et cetera, are leading, overseeing this process as we head down the way to validate our body of knowledge, our NCMA certification program, and ultimately our entire credentialing and accreditation mission to the point where we would like to see ourselves, our vision is to accredit schools and organizations that teach contract management curricula to unify the standards and processes by which it's taught and the body of knowledge that it references. So congratulations on your effort.
Thank you. So the ISO, the ANSI, and the CMMI, I think, are the Rolls Royces, if you will, of that type of process. So way to go.
Thank you.
We are out of time. So, gentlemen, thank you very much for coming in. Rob Cohn, Program Director at NITAC. You can find, just type in NITAAC in Google, and it'll take you right there. And ncma.org. Michael, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both. You've been listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. This is not my day job. I advise companies and various organizations on all aspects of marketing to the government and leveraging social media, particularly LinkedIn, to your advantage. Find me on LinkedIn or at federaldirect.net. And thank you for listening to AmTower Off Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off-Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.